U.S. joint effort to beef up our defenses against Russian influence. We put a battalion in all three Baltic countries plus Poland after the Russians took over Crimea. So, and then fast forward to the story I was going to tell you about Russian malign influence. They put out in social media that one of our NATO troops in one of these Baltic countries had raped a 14-year-old girl. It was totally false. But it was to divide the people in that country about NATO. So it's those kinds of things that are happening all over the NATO alliance. So one of our major strengthenings is our deterrence against Russian intervention. And we now have the battalions that I mentioned, but we're also going to do more of these rotational training sessions. We are we're putting a new command structure in place that is going to really beef up our security in both hybrid, cyber, and then conventional warfare. Because as we know from what the Russians did in the UK, where they put the nerve agent on a former Soviet spy who is now a British citizen, that is another just below Article 5 aggression of Russia, which caused, to Russia's surprise, I have to say, the NATO alliance and other allies of all of our countries to expel Russian diplomats that were targeted as actual spies. And NATO has a Russian delegation, just like any country does. They're a diplomatic delegation, and we expelled a third of them and are not allowing them to replace those people. So now there are 20 in the Russian mission, and we watch them, the NATO security does. But these are the things that Russia is doing to probe wherever they see some kind of opportunity for a malign activity. So we are trying to respond now with a deterrence to all of that so that our alliance stays strong. The other major of the big things that we're doing is counterterrorism. And our new mission in Afghanistan, it's not a new mission, but it's a new strategy for Afghanistan, is also meant to keep the terrorists where they are so they do not come into Europe or into the United States. And that is a major buildup that we are doing in Afghanistan, along with a new strategy that has three basic tenets. One is we're not leaving until conditions are right. So our exit strategy is when there is a stabilizing peace in Afghanistan that allows them to build their country and eliminate the terrorist networks. The second part is we have regionalized the Afghan strategy to not only call out the terrorists that are in Afghanistan, but the enablers. The enablers are Iran, Russia, Pakistan. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, of course, Pakistan. So, thank you. Whoever said that should get a book. Pakistan is the biggest one, actually. But Russia and Iran also are doing a lot of malign activity supporting the Taliban, which is just this treacherous terrorist group that Pakistan actually harbors their leaders. So we've called out Pakistan, and we've also begun to make stronger alliances with India to help us in this regional effort to stabilize Afghanistan. We have a president in Afghanistan who is really taking a lot of initiative, and he's very bold, and he's honest. Sometimes, like in Iraq and in Afghanistan, we have had leaders that we tried to work with but turned out to be corrupt. And we really believe that Ghani is not corrupt, and he also is taking some bold measures. And so he has, in the Afghan-led peace process, reached out to the Taliban to say, come to the table. And just this past week, Ghani announced a ceasefire until the end of Ramadan and called on the Taliban to do the same. And for the first time, we had the clerics, the Muslim clerics in Afghanistan, do a fatwa saying that blowing innocent civilians up is not part of the Islam religion, and it is a basically a sin, and it should be condemned. This was a huge thing because it was the whole council of the Muslim clerics in Afghanistan who signed on to this fatwa. And in fact, the Taliban killed about 8 of them who signed it. But it was so impactful that the Taliban actually did have a ceasefire until the end of Ramadan. And just today, I got a message from the U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan, and he said that President Ghani is extending the ceasefire with the Taliban and asking the Taliban to do the same. So there is now a beginning of an effort at a real capability to show the Taliban that they can't win, and it's I think, a real beginning of a new era in Afghanistan. So we're doing our counterterrorism to keep to kill off the terrorists or else bring them into a peace agreement in Afghanistan so they will not be exported to Europe or to America or Canada. But also to note that the second largest refugee population in Europe today is Afghan. After Syria, it's Afghanistan. So we need to hold the people there to build their country and wipe out the terrorists with them. The other thing we're working on, and this we hope will be a deliverable at the summit of heads of state, which is going to happen July 10th and 11th in Brussels, we are looking at taking a train and advise mission in Iraq if the Iraqi government that's just been elected but not put together to try to get a training and a military college set up for the Iraqis in their governments to be able to stabilize Iraq so we won't have another ISIS as we have seen when we left before. So these are the major things that NATO's doing. And at the summit, we're going to have the new command structure. We're going to talk about burden sharing. I'm going to talk about burden sharing a little bit, and then I'll stop and take questions because I know you all probably have what's on your mind. But burden sharing is one of President Trump's biggest issues. Any of you who have seen the news lately, the president is constantly saying to the other NATO allies, you need to do more. And our goal is a 2% defense spending by each of the 29 allies. Right now, about half of our allies either have the 2% already or they are in a plan that will get them to 2%. And this is important. And I know some of my colleagues have felt like President Trump is very forceful, we know that, and that he talks about this too much and that they can't do it. And the Germans have said, our gross domestic product is so good and it keeps growing that we just can't get there. Well, the president is not taking that as an answer. And I try to tell my colleagues that he's not the first president that has said this to our allies. Every president with whom I served in the Senate has said the same thing. Clinton said it, Obama said it, Bush 43 said it, and now President Trump is saying it. President Trump is saying it in a more forceful way, and I will say that in the last year, we've had the highest increase in spending by our allies since the Cold War, and in 2018, it will be even more than it was last year. So the president is winning this argument. And Angela Merkel was speaking to her own party leadership, and she said, the foreigners are upset with us because we don't spend enough, and they do have a point. So it is beginning to resonate. We are going in the right direction. It will be a big issue at the summit, so you'll read about it. And I think the president should take a success and say, we're going in the right direction. It's not enough yet, but we are going in the right direction because we are, and a lot because his prodding has been so insistent. They are now being shamed into explaining why they can't spend 2% of their gross domestic product on their own defense. We spend 4% on ours. But I'll just say in closing, and then I'll take your questions, the Europeans are just different about security than we are. Americans are willing to fight for our security and our freedom and our way of life. That's just not a European trait. So we are working on bringing them in to understand that this has to be a real alliance. It has to be an alliance that everyone contributes to for its strength. And in a way, they are coming around on these points, and many of them do some of the hardest missions. When I've been to Afghanistan twice since I became an ambassador in August. So I've been around to all of the four division headquarters that we have, and those four division headquarters are led by the United States, Germany, Turkey, and Italy. So while neither Italy nor Turkey nor Germany meet the 2%, they do have troops in harm's way in Afghanistan. So we have to give them some credit for contributing to the alliance in a different way, which I also try to point out to our colleagues in the White House, because yes, we're not doing enough. Yes, we have to get to 2%. But we also do have contributions that if we didn't have our European allies, we'd be doing it by ourselves. And that would be a much bigger cost. So there is a balance here that I think is really good. The alliance is very united and very strong. And it does make a difference that we speak with 29 voices. When Russia speaks, they speak with one voice. If you want to say they have allies, I'll give them Syria. China speaks with one voice. Maybe they have an ally, North Korea. We speak with 29 voices, and we talk about freedom, rule of law, democracies, human rights, those are the things that bind us. And we are so much more powerful because we have 29 people going in the same direction to protect our way of life, our Western way of life. And that's the importance of NATO. Thank you.
Take questions from the audience, and I'd like our summer interns to introduce themselves and say what university they're from, and then we'll open up.
Hi, my name is Natalie Nieves, and I just recently graduated from the University of North Texas.
Great.
Hi, I'm Sunken Duarte, and I'm a rising senior at Texas Christian University.
Good. Let's hear from you.
Okay, now before we start taking questions, I'm going to tell this darling young man that probably didn't want to come this morning.
Actually wanted to.
I'm going to tell you that I'm going to make sure you ask a question. So be thinking about what you might want to ask me about anything, okay?
And you'll be delighted because you're going to get. He encouraged his father to come.
Oh, I'm so impressed. I have to say that.
George, you had a question?
Yes, I do.
My children never would come. So I'm impressed.
Ambassador, I'm George Yates, and
hi.
We visited about. I was very interested in your comments having to do with Russia and disinformation. As you probably know, Russia has had a disinformation campaign on energy in Europe as well as the United States for some time. And a former leader of NATO, Anders Rasmussen, almost 4 years ago gave a speech where he said Russia is destabilizing energy policy in Europe by funding anti-fracking NGOs. He didn't say disinformation, but we know now that that has occurred as well. We've heard very little follow-through on that from NATO. And by the way, Rasmussen said, I know this through security agencies of NATO, of NATO countries. We've seen very little follow-through on this, and I'll be interested in your comments. The situation today is that Russia has largely won. They've repressed domestic production, at least any onshore shale production in Europe. And, of course, there's Nord Stream 2, and their share of the European market, which was their point, is going to go up above the 40% level, creating real dependencies. When Groningen is going down in Europe, and Europe faces some very, very challenging energy situations.
Okay. No, those are really good points, George. And it's true, and I am sure that if we looked into it, that we could possibly find that some of the information on this subject in America is tied back to the same sources. But we are really concerned about Nord Stream 2 because one of the things that so far, our EU allies have maintained the sanctions on Russia after their invasion of Crimea. But the Nord Stream 2 pipeline is going to really fund Russian activities. And we have put a lot of pressure on Germany to not do Nord Stream 2, but they have said they have a contract and they can't undo it. Now, we're still trying to put pressure on, but that's one of, if I did a ledger on Germany, you know, the 2% on this side that they haven't done and Nord Stream 2 are the two things that are the most important for Germany to step up to the plate. They say they're not going to do it, but it is going to give Russia a significant source of income, which they will use to continue to build their, not defense, but offense. And in fact, Russia is violating the INF Treaty. They are making an intermediate ballistic missile system, which the INF Treaty prohibits, and they have the nuclear capability to deliver that anywhere in Europe. So you would think our European allies would be very concerned about that, including Germany. But they're going forward with Nord Stream 2. I think also any kind of sanctions that could make a difference in Russia are right in that energy sector. That is their economy. They have nothing else. And yet we haven't probably done enough to put the sanctions in place that would have prevented a Nord Stream 2. So I think your point is a good one. America, I will say, in one of the interventions, I talked about the importance of not doing Nord Stream 2. And the German ambassador said, well, Texas gas is too expensive. Well, one of the reasons is that we've only been able to export natural gas for, 2 years now. So we don't really have the infrastructure yet to make it as affordable as coming from Russia for the Europeans to buy. Now, we are selling some to especially some of the Eastern European countries, like Poland is a pretty big buyer of our natural gas. But we need more infrastructure. And I've talked to the State Department about doing more to help build the export, the liquefied natural gas facilities that could export our natural gas to Russia, I mean, to the European countries that are now depending on Russia. So all of this is on the drawing boards to be talked about, whether we could get more infrastructure on export, because all of the LNG plants have been for imports in the past, you know, before we allowed exports. So maybe building that up and making our gas more more reasonably priced or more competitive with the Russian might be a help, but I don't know if we can get the price down to that level and keep our European allies from buying from Russia. Because if we could starve them on energy, they would have to come to the table.
Abe, go ahead. Hi, Abe Haddad. My question is, why bring in Russia to the NATO, invite him? Maybe because, you know, just like somebody outside the party, and he like to come join the party, but we lock in the door. Why don't you open the door, let him in? Maybe will he get behave a lot better?
We do have an open door policy in NATO, and there are standards that you have to meet, and we have several on the cusp right now, and particularly probably the closest is Macedonia, because they've just reached an agreement. Greece was vetoing Macedonia because of the name, and they've just reached an agreement with Greece, and hopefully we can start the accession plan for Macedonia very shortly. Also, we're looking at Bosnia, and then, of course, eventually, we'd like to have Ukraine and Georgia, but they're very problematic right now because Russia is holding territory in both Ukraine, well, Crimea, but also eastern Ukraine, and then also Georgia. But we do have an open door, and we believe that by making standards before a country comes in, that they will have a better chance to defend themselves and to hold on to their democracies and the rule of law that will be so necessary for them to have an economy. So we are, and we work with other countries that have expressed an interest. For instance, Sweden is, they could become a member if they wanted, Finland as well. And then there are some other countries that if they wanted to create the standards of a democracy and a rule of law, that we would open the door to them. And it's something that we would like to do because we think that the countries that have come in, like the Baltics and Poland and Romania and Bulgaria, Montenegro, are so much stronger because they've had the standards to meet and they've met them, that even when there are some that have backtracked a bit, several actually, still no one's talking about kicking them out, but we are continuing to stress that they have to keep those standards. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. We have a question? Here comes the mic.
Oh, yeah.
So what is, like, the most challenging part of your job, and, like, what techniques can do you, like, use to, like, overcome those really hard challenges?
That's a great question. What are the most challenging parts of my job, and what do I use to overcome them? Well, first of all, let me say I have a big advantage because they all realize how much America does for European and North American security. So I do have a big footprint that helps me, and it's not because of me, it's because of we're the United States and because people know how much we do for their defense. But let me say this too. Everything is done in NATO by consensus, which means we have a lot of negotiating that has to be done. So if I want to promote a NATO statement, for instance, after the North Koreans tested the intercontinental ballistic missile, I wanted to get the whole NATO council to make a statement that condemned North Korea for doing that. And so everyone wanted to do it, and we have the same goal, but there were wording differences that you have to negotiate. So you just try to see what people are concerned about, and then you try to bring them together, which we do. And people are willing to give on points that are not really important in most instances. And that's just a matter of trying to find out what people want and then knowing what we want and then trying to put those together in a way that comes up with language that helps both sides. So that's it.
We have time for two more questions. We'll take Bill in the back.
I wonder if you could comment on the alignment and apparent confusion in Turkey. What is happening there?
Maybe we'll only take one more question. Stay for another hour.
Right. Yes. We're all very concerned about what is happening in Turkey because Erdogan is becoming more and more autocratic and taking away many of the constitutional provisions that protected a secular democracy in Turkey. That was Ataturk's dream. And sometimes I just think about Ataturk and think, oh my gosh, he did everything he could to make this country a prototype example of a Muslim country that would be secular and democratic. And Erdogan is taking away some of that. Part of it is the strength of the military, because Ataturk picked the military as the one organization he thought could be strong enough to withstand any kind of religious takeover of the government. And now Erdogan, because he, after the coup that failed, has become much more trying to take away powers from the military. And what it's doing is undermining many of the tenets that kept Turkey into a democracy. So many of us are concerned about it, and we continue to work with Turkey to try to embolden them to stay in the alliance and stay on our side. We've been very concerned about purchasing the S-400, which is a Russian ballistic missile defense program, and we've never had a NATO country that put in a Russian piece of equipment that is not interoperable with NATO. So we are really, really working with Turkey to try to get them not to put that S-400 in, because it's going to really make a difference in what we can share with our NATO ally. And they're a good ally. They're one of the framework nations in Afghanistan. They are involved in all of our missions, and they're good fighters. They're great allies. So we're working with them to keep them in the fold with us, because we want them on our side. It's so important that we have that good relationship with Turkey. They spread right across the southern border of Europe, and we need them in so many ways. But we have these differences, and the S-400 is one. On the other hand, they are just about to get their first F-35 to be interoperable with our other NATO countries that have F-35s, and we're very concerned about them having a ballistic missile system that could shoot down an F-35. So, you know, there are just a lot of things that we're working with them very diligently on. And I would say if there is any country in NATO that we spend more time with trying to make sure that they stay with us, it's Turkey. And we want them to stay with us because they are such a good ally. And we want them there in NATO and not to start going closer to Russia.
Sorry, we can't stay longer today, but
So we've had some rogue actors, particularly in Ukraine, for example, Paul Manafort, for example, who was trying to get a pro-Russian leader elected in Ukraine. This seems dramatically counter to U.S. foreign policy. How do you feel about that situation, and what we should do about it?
Well, I don't know the specifics of that situation, but I've been to the Ukraine, to Kiev, since I became an ambassador, and what the uprising of the Ukrainian people at Maidan was amazing. They finally forced the Russian president out. Just by standing their ground in this big square that turned into millions of silent protesters that became a symbol for just the spirit of people in Ukraine. And we are helping them now. We're helping them in every way, especially we are helping them in NATO, but also the United States. One of our former retired generals, General Avazaid, is helping them with the training of their military to try to take back the eastern part that the Russians have encroached on. And we are helping them in many, many ways. Canada also is, by the way, being very helpful with the Ukraine. But the American position is to help the Ukrainians get their eastern part back and get the borders set and get a security there. And then we're, of course, continuing to try to bring Russia to the table on Crimea. But we are very much in their camp. And if there is an American that's not on our mission, then they're rogue, because we are for the Ukrainian people. And if, when you read about the spirit of Maidan, where those people just gathered in strength, and they were almost froze to death. They were shot at by their own police. But they also stood up to the police and said, "You're one of us. What are you doing?" And some of the policemen put their arms down. I mean, it was very, very moving the way they stood their ground and ended up with a million people just staying in this square day after day after day. And it took maybe 5 months before the Russian who was, the people were shouting, "We want Europe, we want Europe," but the president of the Ukraine at the time made an agreement with Russia. And so the people said, "No, we want Europe," and they kept that chant going. And so we're very close with them in NATO and trying to be very helpful. And I think that, I think in the end, the Ukrainian people are going to win there.
Ambassador Hutchison, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And you know, we know you're here just for a few days, and for you to take an hour to be with us, we're just so very, very grateful. And next time you are sitting around the horseshoe around NATO, you will now be able to proudly wear a World Affairs Council scarf,
oh, yay,
which has Dallas-Fort Worth in the middle. I was just checking. Sadly, we don't have Brussels on it, but we have many of the NATO countries. So there we go. Let's give another hand from that. As you might know, she has been, as a senator and as ambassador, just a tremendous supporter of not just the World Affairs Council, but many of you support the International Visitor Program. And we were talking about this earlier. While senator, her office received here in Dallas-Fort Worth, as well as in Houston, and, of course, in Washington, literally scores of international visitors who would come from other countries, elected officials from other countries, to learn about how we operate. And not every senator made the effort to visit, take time out to meet with these visitors the way Senator Hutchison did. And years ago, when I was in Houston, we had a group from Russia, one of the first Russian groups of entrepreneurs. We met with her in her office, and then it wasn't planned. She says, "Well, why don't you just come and watch a little bit of the Senate?" And we went up there. And I just remembered this, which we didn't mention earlier. You grabbed Ted Kennedy like this, and
you
said, "Ted, look up there, wave." And there we were. And then afterwards I said, "You see how we can have bipartisanship?" I remember that.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that, but I don't remember.
Good. Enjoy your Saturday.
The other thing, speaking of Ted Kennedy, I was talking to Sean Hannity on Fox from the cloakroom in the Senate, and Sean said, "If you could get Ted Kennedy to come over and talk to me, I will donate $1,000 to your favorite charity." And Ted did it.